welcome to View from the Bleachers Radio, episode 14. I am your host, Joe Aiello, and today I am flying solo, which could be a really bad thing, or it could be a really good thing, I suppose. It could get the show over a little bit quicker, so for those of you guys who are doing it as a result of a workout, we'll hopefully get you off that treadmill a little quicker. But again, I am your host, Joe Aiello. Sean and Josh, my usual co-hosts, are off tonight, working on some stuff related to work, and so you've just got me. But we do have a special guest later on in the show. We did an interview recently, I believe it was Wednesday or Thursday, with Buster Olney of ESPN. So that'll come out a little bit later in the show, and hopefully you'll enjoy that. He spent about 10 minutes or so talking to me about basically all things Cubs, current state of the team, some guys that could be traded, some just overall team-related things, nothing really related to the series over the weekend, but good interview with Buster Olney. I hope you enjoy that. That'll be coming up later on in the show. Just a quick reminder, you can follow the show at VFTB on Twitter. That's my Twitter handle. You can also follow Josh and Sean. Josh is at JCStats, and Sean can be found at Powell underscore Sean, and Sean is spelled S-E-A-N. You can also email the show. We did have a couple of people that emailed the show earlier this week. We'll try to get those questions answered next week. But you can email the show, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com, and that'll come right to us, and we will try to answer those questions on the show. Just a reminder, when you send those email questions, please make them as interesting as possible, and that could mean that it could be baseball-related, that could mean it could be not baseball-related. We do have a couple of them that came in this week, like I mentioned. We'll get to those probably next week as a result, just with the guys being off. But again, just a reminder, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com is the way you can find us. We need more questions for the mailbag, so please make them fun, make them interesting, and make them creative. We'd love to answer them. Also, finally, you can follow us on iTunes. If you go to the iTunes store, search for at VFTB, or actually, I guess you just search for VFTB. That'll pull up us in the iTunes store. You can subscribe to the podcast that way. We would very much appreciate it if you do that. And once you subscribe, if you would please rate the show and also review the show in there. It takes about 2 minutes to do that, and it helps our rankings tremendously. So if you can do that, we would appreciate it. Finally, we are going to be having a contest this week, and we'll probably announce that. I had hoped to do it this week, but it kind of got a little bit away from us with the fact that the guys were out. So what we are going to do is we are going to actually go with announcing this contest probably next show. But just to give you a tease, we are going to be giving away a copy of Out of the Park Baseball. I'm going to talk a little bit about Out of the Park Baseball just briefly a little bit later in the show. But it's a good way for you to win a copy of the new game that just came out recently. If you missed the show, I think it was 2 weeks ago when we talked to Brad Cook of Out of the Park. It's definitely worth listening, and that was episode 12, I believe, of Out of the Park, or View from the Bleachers Radio. So go ahead and check that out, and it's worth your listen as well. But what I want, excuse me, what I want to do is get right into what happened this week. We saw the Cubs play a total of 5 games. They were scheduled for 6. One of the games, the first game of the series against Cincinnati on Monday, was rained out. And so as a result, we saw them split the series. A 2-game ended up series with the Reds, losing the first one, winning the second one, and then finishing up the weekend with a series win, the first series win since September of 2013 for the Cubs. And realistically, this game could have been, excuse me, this season, or this series for this weekend could have been a sweep. If you were like me, you kind of went into the game on Sunday night expecting to maybe see a sweep, but most likely expecting to see your heart get broken on that. And, you know, when the Cubs fell down early, it was kind of those things where you said, okay, I knew what to expect. I don't know why I got my hopes up. And then they battled back, and, you know, in the seventh inning, the score was tied, and you thought to yourself, maybe this could happen. And it came down to the ninth, and the ninth inning is where I want to talk about. The ninth inning is where I thought that Rick Renteria really lost the game for us. He said on the record before the game that he did not want to use Hector Rondon in the game. Rondon had been doing well, had pitched 3 straight games before that, and really shouldn't have been in this ball game at that point, but for some reason, he went to him. Excuse me, I believe he had pitched 3 days in the last 3 out of the last 4 days. So, you know, he decides that, hey, I'm going to go to Rondon, and it was clear that he didn't have his best stuff. He had good stuff, but he didn't have his best stuff. And as a result, you see guys get on base. And in a spot where I thought he could have made a change, he had Wesley Wright warming up. And in a spot that I thought he could have made a change, he didn't. He left Rondon in the game. And so he left Rondon in to face... who was it? I believe it was Matt Carpenter. And so, you know, he leave Rondon in there against a lefty. When you have Wesley Wright warming up with two outs, why not bring in Wesley Wright at that point? He ended up walking, he ended up walking the batter, and you see Renteria come out of the dugout, just kind of have that, man, you almost had it, dude. I thought you had the game. Kind of look over his face like, ah, you tried. And that's not the kind of thing I want to see from my manager. I want to see you be proactive, and that just wasn't it. When Rondon gave up the hit to allow the two runs, it was against a batter that I didn't think he should have been facing. and I'm trying to figure out Renteria, or he should have been out of the inning at that point. Matt Carpenter should have been the guy that was facing Wesley Wright. Instead, he walks Carpenter, ends up facing Molina, because at that point you're not going to bring in Wesley Wright to face the righty, so you're stuck keeping Rondon in again against Molina, and Molina made a pay. And then what was funny was, as you see Wesley Wright come into the game, Wesley Wright needed one pitch to Matt Holliday, gets him fly out to right field, and the inning is over. So in the end, it ends up costing the Cubs dramatically, because had those runs not scored, and again, obviously you have the benefit of hindsight, but had those runs not scored, you would have seen the Cubs score one run in the ninth, and potentially win that game on a walk-off double by Luis Valbuena. So it was a little frustrating to see that, because it was a series that we could have won. The Cardinals are not playing the best baseball right now, and anytime you could take advantage of that, you have to do it. And so that was very frustrating, because it was a series that we could have swept. But, you know, overall, a series win, a three-game winning streak this week. Overall, it was a pretty good week to be a Cub fan, considering what we've seen so far. I was pleased with what I saw this week, and now as we head into a week where we face the White Sox, you figure this is going to be a tough challenge. The White Sox are playing a lot better than I think a lot of people have expected to play, and it'll be interesting to see what we see from the Cubs, if they can build on this winning streak and build on this series win and hopefully come out fighting well. I'd love to see them take 3 out of 4 from the White Sox, because it's a two-game split home and home over this course of the next 4 days. So if we could see, you know, 3 out of 4 against the White Sox, I think that would be huge, and I think that that's a realistic goal for this team right now. The problem is we're going to have to face a guy like Jose Abreu, and if you haven't seen this guy hit, he has been amazing. He has been everything that has been advertised for the Sox since coming over from Cuba. He leads the team in home runs with 12, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe he leads the majors in home runs. I'll have to check on that, but he has been a beast, basically leading them in just about every offensive category, and he's going to be a hard, hard guy to face. So it'll be interesting to see what type of team we see, if it's a team that comes out and continues to fight, or if it's a team that's not the best. You know, I like our pitching matchups in the Sox series. You've got Samardzija, you've got Arrieta, and you've got Travis Wood all pitching in the 4 games, and then you've got Edwin Jackson. So out of those 4 games, 3 out of those 4 games, I like who we see, and then Friday we've got Jason Hamill going. So over the next 5 days, I think there's realistic potential for 3, possibly even 4 wins. It's just a matter of it all starts tonight. You've got to take care of business at Wrigley with Samardzija, and really look for, if you can get a sweep at Wrigley, that would be ideal, and then hopefully split between Wood and Arrieta at U.S. Cellular Field. So overall, the biggest complaint that I had, like I said, this weekend was bullpen management, and realistically, the bullpen overall. The bullpen right now consists of 8 guys, and you guys have heard me complain about this on the blog before. I don't see a reason why you would need 7 guys, let alone 8 guys, in the bullpen. When you look at our bullpen health report, which is on viewfromthebleachers.com, if you go there, it's on the right-hand sidebar. What you'll see is we track the number of pitches each guy makes in every outing. And so if you just read backwards from, you know, in during the week, you'll see when a guy was last pitched and how long he's pitched. And what you'll see on there is you'll see guys like Wesley Wright, who pitched 1 pitch yesterday, and prior to that he pitched 11 pitches on Wednesday, and that's it. So you see a guy like Wright. You see a guy like Pedro Strop, who hasn't seen very many outings lately. you know, you see a guy like James Russell who's made three pitches in the last week. It's just a waste of bullpen arms. You can't stay sharp when you have this many guys in the pen. And if you've got a guy like Rondon who has pitched 2 days in a row, now you're bringing him into three. Why? Why not bring somebody like Wesley Wright? Why not bring somebody like Pedro Strop? Why would you go again with Rondon? It just doesn't make sense to have eight guys in the pen. I don't even like seven, but I'll settle with seven. I don't understand why we still have eight. I would like to see that changed as soon as possible. But overall, I thought the week was good, and I think it'll be an interesting week this week. I wanted to touch a little bit on out-of-the-park baseball. So we talked a little bit about this 2 weeks ago, like I mentioned. And Josh and I talked a little bit off-air. I think Sean was involved in the conversation, too, about potentially just basically replaying the situation or replaying the season over the course of this Cub season on Out of the Park and just see what we were going to be doing. So I took to that task. I have taken on the role of the general manager slash manager of the Chicago Cubs, and it's my plan to play out the entire season and see how we do. And I think what you'll be surprised is the Cubs are actually not doing that bad so far. I haven't caught up all the way to where we are in the season right now, but I'm working my way there because the game obviously only takes about 10-15 minutes. So I am working my way there. So far, the Cubs are 5-5, so we're playing 500 ball. And a couple of interesting things so far. One of the most interesting things that I've experienced so far was in game 1, 2, and 3, realistically, of the Cubs season. What we saw was a little bit of out-of-the-ordinary type stuff. The first game was, obviously, Jeff Samardzija pitching. And Jeff Samardzija, in game 1 of the season, just got creamed. I was actually really, really surprised. I thought that he would do well. You know, you never can really say, hey, will he do dominant? But, you know, what did he... Because it's a video game. But Jeff Samardzija in day one of the season, you know, we got crushed. We lost 9-2 to the Pirates. Same schedule as relief. And Jeff Samardzija's pitching line, 3.2 innings work, 10 hits, 8 runs, all earned. And he just finished the day with a 19.64 ERA. Just got crushed. That was a little disheartening. We lost 9-2. So then we move into game 2, and I thought, okay, what's going to happen? Well, Travis Woods on the mound. Maybe we can rebound. Travis Woods, 7 innings pitched, so you like that. 6 earned runs, and we take the loss as well. So now we come into game 3, and I'm frustrated because Jason Hamill in this game is not rated huge. Like, he's not pitching the way he has this year. He's rated as a guy who is almost a 500 ERA for his career, so I wasn't all that optimistic, but Jason Hamill instead proved me wrong, pitching a complete game shutout, one hitter, actually had a no-hitter going into the ninth inning, and just dominated. Just from the time he started pitching to the time he ended the game, just rocked the house. The top of the ninth, he was facing Gregory Polanco, and Polanco hit the pitch, the 1-0 pitch for a single, and then from then on, he ended up getting the guys, he ended up turning a double play at that point, and then finishing out against Starlin Marte. Again, complete game. It was awesome. One of the closest times I've ever gotten to a no-hitter in a video game, and that was really, really cool. But overall, 5-5, so not horrible. The biggest thing I see, and I see this really with this team in general, is in real life, we're just not hitting a baseball. We just don't have a lot of offense, and it's the same way in this out-of-the-park season. There's just not a lot of guys hitting the baseball. Emilio Bonifacio is hitting .286 for me in 10 games. Wellington Castillo's hitting .053. I ended up dropping John Baker. If you saw my post today on the blog, you saw that I'm not all that happy with John Baker, and I actually made a move fairly early in the season to pick up a free agent, Yorvi Torrealba, as my backup. So he is taking the place of John Baker, who's currently in AAA for me. And that's even Torrealba, though, is not doing that great. He's hitting .267 in 15 at-bats. So it's been an interesting offensive season for this team so far. I'm hoping that'll change. But it'll be interesting to see how some of the players in the minor leagues develop corresponding to what they're going to do in real life. Chris Bryan is not hitting the ball well in AAA for me. He started the year in AAA, and I was fine with that. The computer put him there, and he probably could maybe be better off in AA, but based on his stats in this game, I think he's going to be suited for AA or AAA. But Javier Baez, on the flip side, is hitting .371 with 3 home runs, so It'll be interesting to see how long I can hold him out of the majors, because everything in you wants to kind of follow the real life track, but I'm beginning to get very, very antsy and want to call up Javier Baez, and it's only 10 games in the season. So, guys, if you haven't played out of the park baseball, I would strongly recommend checking it out. Just go to their website, just Google out of the park baseball, or I think it's OOTPdevelopments.com. It is a game that will suck you in, and like I said, we're going to have a contest that we'll announce next week on how you can win a copy of it. We've got one copy to give away, and we would love for that to be you. So if you haven't played it, check it out. They have a demo version of some of the older versions of the game, but it's well worth your time. It will change the way you manage a team. It'll change the way you watch baseball. It's really, really a fun game. But that's enough for that, and that's enough for blabber out of me, out of a one-man show. I feel like I've been talking like a racehorse. But what we'll do now is we want to get to the interview that we did with Buster Olney. This interview occurred on Thursday, and so this was before the weekend series with the Cardinals, and Buster was kind enough to share a little bit about what his feelings are on the state of the team, and I believe the audio on his end is outstanding. I believe the audio on my end is subpar because I was on my cell phone. So hopefully you'll enjoy it, and we welcome any feedback that you have. We would love to hear it. Again, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. But for right now, let's bring in Buster Olney.
I'm joined now by Buster Olney of ESPN, senior writer for ESPN.com. And Buster, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Sure, no problem.
So I want to talk to you a little bit. You guys are doing the Sunday night game this week in Cubs-Cardinals, and that's a huge rivalry game for the Cubs, although lately for the last few years it hasn't been much of a rivalry. And I wanted to take a little bit of time to talk with you about the current state of the Cubs right now, and just pick your brain a little bit about what your feelings are and if the team is headed in the right direction.
I think it is, given the path that they've chosen, and there's no question that, generally speaking, the organization is getting better. But really, I think there are three distinct paths they could theoretically take. One is to spend a lot of money. It's pretty clear Ricketts doesn't want to do that. One is to sort of try to make it up as they go year to year, bet on the front office, picking out the right guys, not worry quite so much about, picking near the top of the draft and getting elite talent. That's a path that the Oakland Athletics have gone. You know, when you look at, their drafting history, it's not like, besides Sonny Gray, it's not like they've absolutely killed it in their draft in the way that, say, the Pittsburgh Pirates or the Washington Nationals have at the front end. But, they've decided to go for long-term stability, long-term growth, and, at some point, I'm sure the front office hopes to augment what they're building in the farm system through free agency, but there's no question they're accumulating talent. You could argue to me whether it might have been better for the Cubs to try to sort of thread the needle the way that Oakland has, but that's not the way they've gone. They've decided to go take a long-term plan, and again, there's no question that they're collecting a lot of high-end talent.
There's a lot of perception from some of the Chicago beat writers, particularly Gordon Whitmire at the Sun-Times, and are really not necessarily planning on, but unable to spend money due to financial restraints. What have you heard on that, and what are your feelings on that overall ownership situation? Do you think that they're hamstrung? Because I tend to maintain the philosophy that, really, what would you have wanted them to spend money on at this point anyways? And so I don't think it's a matter of we're not spending because we can't. I think it's a matter of we're not spending because we don't need to at this point.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that they are probably, my guess is that the Cubs, we had, Tom Ricketts in that interview we did recently. He basically talked about, having, different financial situation than he expected, having more expenses than he expected. I don't think there's any question that the situation with the rooftop owners is probably, not only spent a lot of their time, but I think also has been boxed in financially a little bit. But I also, agree with you that, it's one thing, it's nice to say, we want our guys to go out and spend money. Well, did you want to be the team that was going to sign Robinson Cano to a 10-year deal for $240 million? I personally think that's a bad idea. Would you want it if the Cubs had been the team to, go out on a guy like Tanaka for $200 million or $175 million, and outbid the Yankees? I don't necessarily think that would have been the right thing to do if you're talking about trying to build something that's going to be sustaining. We'll be able to I think, be able to judge in within 2 years, you know, how they've done in terms of building pitching, because that to me is the biggest question mark about where they stand. But I think your point is well taken, that it's not as if there've been a lot of great candidates on the free agent market, which is so privately.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Right now, the focus on this team needs to be, again, once again this year, as we head into the trade deadline, moving some of the talent that they have in addition to some of the veterans, and just basically see if we can begin to continue this rebuild process. There's a couple of names that continue to come up. I've seen them in your column, and I've seen them in other people's columns. One is Jeff Samardzija. Another one is Jason Hamill. And then even secondary guys like Darwin Barney and Nate Sheerholz. If you had to predict, based on what you're hearing, some of those guys that could be on the block, how many of those guys do you think actually have a value and will likely be moved before the deadline?
Jason Hamill, it all depends on whether or not he stays healthy. And if they get something in return for him, it's not going to be an A prospect. You know, it's they would be doing well for a veteran pitcher on a one-year deal who's 32 years old, who scared away a lot of teams with his medical history during the winter. You know, a lot of teams looked at what they saw in his reports and said, we don't want to touch that. But inevitably, when we get to June or July, just like with Scott Feldman last year, you'll get a team that's desperate enough to say, you know what, we got to get some sort of pitching, and if Hamill continues to pitch well, you get something decent. You know, Samardzija, clearly to me, at this point, until the Rays put David Price out there, he's probably going to be the best guy on the trade market. And if they were to be able to replicate what they got in the deal with Texas for Matt Garza, they'd be doing pretty well. It was interesting. Within 2 weeks after that Garza trade last year, I spoke with someone within the Texas organization that was like already regretting that they had made that trade. You know, feeling like that they had paid heavily because C.J. Edwards is a pretty good pitching prospect. And they felt like that, you know, they probably weren't going to get the return on Garza that they expected based on his early performance. And on top of that, you know, as it turned out, that's exactly what happened, that they didn't make the playoffs. And to make that trade was a gamble that, you know, they intended to be able to ride it out and actually make it the postseason.
What do you think about Darwin Barney? Does he have value at this point, given that his bat has been so poor? I know he has, you know, high quality defensive skills with a gold glove on his repertoire, but I mean, does he have value at this point to a team like the Yankees or the Tigers that need infield help?
You probably, at this point, given the offensive questions, you're not going to get much in return. I mean, you might get a C-plus prospect, because the thing is that as he goes up the arbitration scale, that's what kind of shoos people away. You know, and he's a respected guy. I always tell people all the time, I think Darwin's going to be a guy that I'll be talking to 30 years from now working in a front office someplace. But the lack of offensive production basically takes him out of play for all the American League teams. You know, during the spring, when I'd be talking to executives from teams in the American League, and, you know, they were talking about looking for an infielder, a backup infielder, they would talk about Darwin. They go, well, you know, he could help us defend. You know, he could catch the ball, but we need more than that. And I think that probably limits the Cubs' options a lot. And, you know, their best chance for getting some willing to eat some of the money that he's going to be paid the rest of the year. You know, they're probably – and that's it might sound a little bit crazy, but I think it's a situation where teams are okay taking on some salary for a star player when you get into the midseason time. But for Darwin, because of the lack of offense, I think the Cubs are going to wind up having to eat some of the dollars owed to him.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I had a column up the other day that just basically went over the options of what the Cubs have with him, and it wasn't pretty right now. In the best-case scenario, is you just kind of have to wait and see and hope that the bat comes back. Also, the last question that I had for you was more regarding the team as a whole. They're going through a battle with the rooftops at Ridley Field, and I just wanted to get your sense of feeling. Tom Ricketts has said that if they needed to do it, they could move the team to Rosemont and move out of Ridley Field, and I wanted to get your sense, since you've been reporting and covering Major League Baseball for a while now, what would you think that would do to the Cubs and their fan base in the event that the Cubs decided to move out of Ridley Field and build a park over in the north side and just, you know, move to the suburbs?
It would be really interesting, you know, and I'll absolutely qualify this by saying I've done no specific reporting on this. I couldn't tell you if this is mostly an empty threat, and that would be my instinct. That, you know, it's a waving of a sword, but there have been times in the past where, you know, that type of thing has been done, where, you know, a team would say, well, we're going to move to another ballpark and we're looking to make more money, and you go, yeah, right. And for example, you know, with a George Steinbrenner, he used to talk about moving to New Jersey before he got his ballpark deal. But on the other hand, there have been times when teams have followed through on it. And these guys are businessmen, and they're going to bet on themselves. And you know, as great as Wrigley is and as much history as there is, there's also no question about it that they're limited in a way that other teams aren't in terms of what they can get. Now, to me, the part, if the Ricketts family actually seriously considered doing that, I think the part that they might not necessarily be, you know, evaluating as seriously as they should is what happens to the Cubs brand once you take them out of Wrigley. Because it seems like that's one of those situations where, you know, it's a destination place. People, as we know, for years haven't cared about whether or not the team won or lost. They just like to go and sit in the bleachers and watch games because of the history. And if the Cubs move, that's gone. And that's a huge part of what they are right now, which is why, again, my instinct, without having done any serious reporting on this, is that, you know, this is an owner, you know, waving his saber, trying to get a little bit of leverage.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Buster, thanks so much for doing this. I don't know if you heard the birds in the background, but I know you would appreciate that based on what you saw for spring training. So thanks so much for taking the time to do this.
Oh, no problem, and I totally respect it. It's been a long winter for you. It's been a long winter for me. I'm actually talking to you sitting on my porch in the sunshine. What a great change.
Thanks so much, Buster. Take care.
Okay, see ya.
And that's going to do it for another edition of this View from the Bleachers Radio. Like I said, rate the show, review it on iTunes. We'd love to have it. And until next time, I'm your host, Joe Aiello, for Sean and Josh. We'll see you next week.